Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This crowd rises to its feet. Totoro slams it home. Garland left wing, three ball. Perfect. Garland right of the lane, locked. Mobley, pow. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow with the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of live sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. The Cleveland Cavaliers come home after a 2-1 road trip. Not the two I expected, not the one I expected, but they are back after what I would deem an overall successful road trip. They have won the tiebreaker over the Milwaukee Bucks with their win over the Indiana Pacers, and I'm winning today with my co-host Carter Rodriguez joining me. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, man. Busy day. Got a haircut, much needed. voted. I hope everyone voted today. Primary and local election day. Always good to participate in democracy, Justin. Ever heard of it?
I haven't.
That's crazy that you hadn't heard of it. It's amazing. The Cavs won a game that I thought they were going to lose. And at the beginning of it, kind of seemed like it was getting ready to kind of match the pattern or the rhythm of some of their kind of uninspiring losses lately.
Yeah.
Where the offense just kind of wasn't clicking. No one was playing with any particular force on offense. You know, ever since Donnie has been out, the rim pressure has been quite poor. A lot of kind of aimless probing from all the guards, not just Darius, but Darius also had a pretty nightmarish first half. Then Karis kind of goes on a personal run at the end of the second, and then the whole team kind of wakes up in the third and fourth quarter, plays an Indiana team that is really tough, especially at home. They played them really well. They close out the game on a super well executed short roll pass from Darius to Jarrett to Isaac, and the Cavs 10-day signing in Marcus Morris has an unbelievable game. So it went from, man, are we just gonna keep ping ponging back and forth and back and forth? And by the way, we still haven't strung together a win streak.
Yeah, I was about to say, technically yes,
still are doing that, but you know. Again, a 2-1 road trip still feels pretty good. Again, the two games they won are not the ones I would have expected them to win. So, all in all, I feel pretty good. The team still kind of needs to prove, I still think they kind of still owe us that big stretch. But yeah. I think beating a team that has played us very tough this year, baiting them into our style, and just kind of out-executing them down the stretch without anyone having Morris is probably the only guy who had like an uncommonly good offensive game as a scorer.
Yeah.
And I thought they just kind of, they fought and clawed to a win, which they need to do when they're this beat up.
Yeah, and I think last night was a prime example of just how helpful Caris LeVert can be and how valuable he's been and why he should be in those six man of the year conversations, because that's what you want, right? You want games where when your starters don't have it, that your sixth man comes in, breathes life into the team, energizes everybody. I thought they came out of this out of halftime and played a much, much better game. I had tweeted in the first half, basically, like, I didn't think that Darius or Jarrett had been particularly good. I know Allen had some points at that point, but I thought his defensive positioning was a half second slow throughout the night, missing at the rim where some of that finishing hasn't necessarily been there. And Darius, like, it was just over dribbling without really a purpose. And, if you're probing without intention, what you're doing is no longer probing, because you're not creating an advantage. You're not getting the defense into rotation. You're essentially loitering offensively. And, there were some times where there was those bailout possessions, but I thought it was so nice to see him go through one of those halves where, nothing's falling, the shot's not really dropping, you're not creating an advantage offensively, and then come out of the half, scores two buckets, assists on a quick 8 points. The playmaking was fantastic from him. Even though he didn't shoot great in the second half, that's what I want to see. When he's playing like that, and he's creating those advantages, and he's being assertive, there is a floor to what he's doing, and he's making everybody else better. I can live with hot and cold shooting as long as, you know, he's being a little bit more decisive, and the offense overall has momentum, because especially with Donovan out, if he's not doing that, nobody else is.
Yeah, and at no point, I don't think, did he really have a great game. He had a good stretch at the beginning of the third, for sure. But everything else, like, even in the fourth quarter, I don't think it ever felt easy for him, you know? He was getting Jalen Smith on him on switches, and they were having to bring up a screener to help him get ahead of steam past him. Like, it just wasn't his night. Yeah. But, like, to your point, the difference between an assertive, decisive Darius, even on a night where it's quote-unquote not his night, is setting up guys, you know, drawing attention. He made a couple. I mean, he had 7 assists. 3 of them were like unbelievable highlight assists that only Darius can throw. So I think it's one of those things where you really have to watch the game closely, because I think there's a reason I was pretty frustrated and disappointed with Darius's first half performance, and I wasn't that disappointed with Darius' second half performance, even though it wasn't that much better. I mean, he finished 5-for-18 from the field for 13 points and had 5 turnovers and 7 assists. Again, not a good game, but it's much more about his floor raising ability that I think we focus on, that I think we've been grumpy when that's been missing this year, and he did that in the second half. So that's the kind of stuff you need to see, especially if the scoring isn't on point. And like, in general, I may accuse the whole team of this. There was a lot of these, you know, in the first half. I think there were a lot of sets where you just kind of saw them waltzing into the set. You know, they were running the play, but no, was anyone set running at that decisively or hard? No. And, you know, guys like Nimhard and Neesmith are really cool defenders in that way. Like TJ McConnell as well, who, my goodness, I thought he was cooked last year, and he is back. I am back to pining for this man. But those guys are so good at blowing up your, you know, when you half-ass an action, they are going to blow it up. They are going to, you know, they're going to burst in with, you know, throw their shoulders, throw their hips, and just knock you off balance and not yield an advantage. You know, there are teams where you can half-walk through an action, and as long as the other team isn't paying that close of attention, you can yield a decent look. I feel like those point of attack defenders that were on Darius and on Karis were not allowing that. So credit to the Cavs. I thought they were, you know, walking into their offense, into their sets, and walking through their sets early, and they stopped doing that. You know, they scored 29 in the second quarter and 36 in the third. And, you know, those are the stretches that won them the game in the end. So I obviously, everyone would love them just to start well. And like, I'm sure that, I know that's a thing they've talked about that they haven't been doing as perfectly lately. But, you know, I'm still happy they found it rather than, you know, just not being able to get there, because they don't win the game. And if they don't find a way to, you know, up the ante a little bit.
Yeah. And I think what we want to see is that sense of urgency, because even prior to the Pelicans game, you heard it was a consistent point of emphasis. Hey, the Pels, they have the longest winning streak in the NBA. They're the best first quarter team in the NBA over this period. They get out to great starts. We want to get out to a better start. That's exactly what they did. They set the tone in that first quarter and really put themselves in kind of pole position to win that game. And it was funny. I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about the Houston loss, because I think that's one of those that you just kind of throw away. But I was in our Discord game threads prior to the game, and as soon as I saw Houston wasn't starting a big man, I was like, guys, I feel terrible about this game. I feel like this is one of those games where Houston's just going to bomb away from three. They're going to get hot. It's going to be a weird night. The Cavs are going to come out and run everything at half speed, and they're just not going to take this seriously. I got criticized immediately for being a little too doom and gloom, because I have been too doom and gloom lately, and it was 100% right.
Yeah, there's no way to say this without sounding like an annoying, like, know-it-all. It just kind of feels like a lot of their losses this month have been March losses. Like, you know, yeah. Like, yeah, the season's long, we're beat up, we expended a lot of energy to overcome the last injuries, and playoffs are so close, and like, I just think there's been a bit of a focus thing, you know?
I think that's fair, like, to say. I mean,
which you see across the league. It's not pointing out that it's common doesn't mean it's like a good thing, you know? Mm-hmm. But like, I just have felt like, you know, I was watching that, by the way, 5 o'clock tips are awesome until you have kids, then you're useless. You're barely watching. Yeah. But, when I was watching, like, I just immediately was like, yeah, this isn't going to happen tonight.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, you're going to have those games. You have them all year, but especially at this time, I feel like you're extra susceptible to them.
Yeah. And the benefit of, you know, coming out flat and losing that game to Houston is we didn't lose a playoff series to them last year. So we don't have to like pretend that we're like really sifting through what happened and what could this all mean? Like, I think win or lose, when the Cavs have a rematch against the Knicks, nothing that occurred in that last game is going to be applicable for that series. Like, I just don't think that there's any data points there. But it's frustrating because I understand that it's normal, that, you know, that's one of the challenges of this time of year, but it is still such a tight standings race, right? Like, if you lose against Indiana, man, they would be in a tough spot this week. Like, I think this week, you know, you got Miami, you got Minnesota and Miami again. If there was a chance, just kind of playing the schedule game, if there was a spot that the Knicks would pass the Cavs, it would likely occur this week. Like, I think the Cavs have an easier April after this road trip's done, and you know, they play a couple losing teams and whatnot. Knicks have a tougher finish to the season. But if it's going to occur, it would happen this week. And I think the disappointing thing about dropping these games against teams you should win is you're taking away that breathing room. And as much as I like to see the Cavs in high pressure environments, see how they respond in those situations, make sure that, you know, hey, the benefit of being in games that really matter is it feels great when you win those games. The flip side is, man, you could make this so much easier on yourselves, especially when you have injuries. Like, you look at the last 12 games, the Cavs are 1-4 against teams below 500, and they're 5-2 against teams above 500. Prior to that stretch, the Cavs were 24-2 against teams with a losing record. Like, twice as many losses against losing teams in that stretch than you had, like, the rest of the season combined. Like, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think it's unbelievable in both directions. One, the Cavs were, like, you know, it's funny. The Cavs have just kind of given us, you know, I think the way the season has gone almost kind of lays out why people are never going to be happy. Because they, you know, they are beating the snot out of bad teams. Had a couple, you know, close losses to good teams from, you know, January and February. And everyone's saying, yeah, well, they're taking care of bad teams, and that's good, but, you know, we really need to see them take care of some good teams. Then, over the last, like, 3 weeks, they've taken care of, like, 6 really, really good teams and then lost all the bad teams, and now everyone's like, well, can we take the bad team seriously? And I think what's important to note is if they do both, they would never lose. They would win 70 games. And, you know, there's a reason only the Celtics are going to win 60 plus this year.
Yeah.
Is that nobody does both all the time. So, like, I do think there is a bit of a weird whiplash for us, because as fans, we are watching a team that consistently took advantage of those kind of opportunities all year, just kind of fumbling a little bit as of late.
Mm.
So like, it feels like a departure, but ultimately I do think you just kind of want to see, I think more than anything, I think the grump is probably because we just want to see them put together one more 5-6-7 game stretch of really elite play. Yeah. And I think that is a reasonable concern, because you just want to be playing your best ball going into the playoffs. So again, and like, I know we're kind of harping on the negative right now, when the Cavs have won 2 of their last 3, and 2 of those wins were definitely tough and meaningful road wins.
Yep.
But like, I do think, like, it's, we really haven't dove into the uneven play this deep, and I think I think that's why, because even in this Pacers game, I think there was just some really uneven play. It wasn't just the Pacers were executing so darn well that we were, and they were having a great night, and we were having a mediocre one to start. I think the Cavs weren't playing particularly well. So there's just a bit of that where that, like, they just have to, I think they just have to find that rhythm. But, you know, I just also think we probably should be careful about asking to have our cake and eat it too.
Oh, for sure. And I think you're right that at this time of year, just recognizing how important the schedule is right now, how important each of these matchups are, like, you just want to see that consistency, right? Like, you want that little bit of feel good. You want, like,
and the two seed would be nice.
Yeah, two seed would be nice. And you know, in order for the Cavs to get the two seed, because Milwaukee's playing basketball, they're going to need to play more consistent. They're going to need to deliver as consistently as Zoom does for us. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Brother, you haven't done a Zoom read 16 minutes into a pod before. That was crazy. As thrown off as I've ever been.
I think I used to be a 15-minute guy. Oh, my. Not. I think I did it more frequently with the podcast. And I'm going to be blushing for the rest of the podcast now.
Admin, don't listen. Don't listen to this, Cavs admins. Don't cancel us. Justin used to be a 15-minute ad read guy. Yeah. And, you know, not everyone has that kind of stamina.
No, they do not. But part of the reason why the Cavs need to get some consistency now is obviously we're still down Evan Mobley, still down Max Struess, and we did get the announcement today from the Cavs that Donovan Mitchell will be reevaluated in a week as a result of his broken nose. Not a big surprise or even that disappointing, because I just kind of assumed he was going to be out with the knee. So that's going to give him more time. We'll see if we have Mass Donovan in a little bit of in the near future, but hopefully it doesn't keep him out too much longer than that. We got the matchup against Philly next Friday, so that's definitely one that I have circled where it'd be nice to have him back. But like Darius in particular, I think we need him to continue to build in the right direction, right? Like I thought some of his recent games had been phenomenal. I thought the Pelicans game, like we talked about, was his best game of the season. And then the next two after that just weren't as effective. And, you know, maybe some of it is just regression. Like he's been shooting the cover off the ball recently. That's going to come back down to earth at some point. You kind of hope that it doesn't happen in any one individual game. But I still think what we saw in the second half against Indiana, if he's playing like that, I feel better about the Cavs' chances, because it reminds me even of how Donovan played against the Pelicans, where, yeah, he didn't shoot well, but I thought he was decisive and created advantage and got the defense in rotation and made everyone better. That's what we need from Darius. And, you know, you just kind of trust at this point that the shot is eventually going to drop.
Yeah, I think obviously he's very, very important. I think that, you know, Jarrett is just as important. Jarrett, I think post-break has just kind of seemed not his best, you know, not bad by any means, but not his best. You know, just a few of those like kind of head scratcher plays. I thought he played much better in the second half as well. I do want to ask, because Adam Eaton in the chat just said, who's back first, Struess, Mobley, Wade, or Mitchell? And like, I don't know the answer to that question, but it did make me think in the non-Donovan Mitchell division, because, you know, we know he's the answer. Who do they miss the most right now between Struess, Mobley, and Wade?
I think Evan. Strus is an easy answer too, just because he's been such kind of a plus minus darling for them. But I think Sam's been playing better recently, and you know, you're getting enough production out of the wing that I just feel like when you look at how Jared Allen has been playing recently, I think he's been a little overtaxed. Like, I think he's been asked to do so much defensively. You know, starting George Niang makes the most sense in terms of who's available, but it does put a big, heavy burden on his shoulders. I believe since the All-Star break, they have a 116 defensive rating when Niang and Allen are sharing the floor together. And if you look at Allen's defensive rating alone over that time, it's 113 total. So, you know, the defense with Allen on the court without Niang is obviously considerably better, but I just feel like he's been kind of worn down as a result of that. And not having Evan Mobley, particularly in this time without Tristan Thompson as well, I think that it has been a difficult thing for the Cavs. And, you know, if there was one that I could get back on the court, I think it would be Evan, because I think him rediscovering a rhythm prior to the playoffs would be the most important out of all of these guys.
Yeah, it's funny. I think Evan's probably the right answer for all those reasons you said, but my brain did go to Strus first. I just think they sometimes miss his seriousness. You know, like I kind of grumped at the team in the first quarter against the Pacers for kind of walking through sets. Not a problem with Max Strus. That guy's going to go 200% at all times. I just think his professionalism really sets an example. You know, you see a guy like that sprinting that hard off every screen, fighting that hard on every switch, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I think that kind of stuff is such a good tone setter for the team. And I think there's a reason he's been kind of our plus minus darling, even when he hasn't shot well or scored well. I think it's that kind of seriousness that he brings to that group and all the groups, frankly. So I lean towards, I think you're right that it's Mobley, but like, I'm surprised at how much I've missed Strus, given that our other wing players are not playing poorly.
Yeah. Isaac's been playing very well still. I thought, you know, even though Tyrese Haliburton is in a slump right now and has been for some time, I thought Okoro did a good job making him uncomfortable, generating, you know, turnovers and other kind of uncomfortable possessions from him. I just thought that he did a good job overall. And, you know, obviously having Marcus Morris step up in the way that he did was unexpected, but you can just kind of tell the benefit of getting a veteran in there. And I thought it was fitting that his first game came against Indiana, because, you know, that's the reason why he was on the buyout market to begin with. He had been playing well for Philadelphia. He was playing about 17, 18 minutes per game for them, shooting 40% from three. And the reason he had to move was as the salary filler for Buddy Hield, right? Indiana wanted to shed some salary. Buddy Hield the Sixers obviously has helped improve them. And it put him in a situation where, you know, he gets moved to the Spurs and gets bought out. And I'm thrilled, because I don't think buyout guys are someone that you really expect to move the needle or make a big difference. If you can get one win out of them, I think that's a win.
Ding.
And you've got that already. And, you know, listening, I know he signed a 10-day contract, but from his comments pregame with Serena, he was talking about being excited going on the playoff run with the Cavs and whatnot. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's spending the rest of the season in Cleveland. But I think he gives you what you've been talking about for a while, which is that pumpkin insurance. And, you know, having another veteran that you can trust that's been through the playoffs, that has a relationship with JB Bickerstaff at that backup power forward position, is so damn important, because you know he can shoot, you know he's going to compete on defense, he's going to be in the right spots. And just like the veteran savvy, like there's not going to really be a record scratch with him. He might take some pull-ups that you wish were a three-pointer. But I just think he's going to be decisive on the court. And when you talk about some of the struggles that Cleveland has had in these Houston and Indiana games, it's a result of not being decisive, right? It's going a half second slow. And I just don't think that he's a player that plays at that speed.
Yeah, well, it's funny. When I posed the question, you know, who do we miss most, Mitchell, Mobley, Strus, or Wade, the reason it's not Wade is because of the game Morris turned in last night, where, you know, again, it's interesting because you look at Morris and he kind of feels like something of a bridge between, at his best, he kind of feels like something of a bridge between Niang and Wade, where yeah. Wade is by, you know, Niang is clearly a much better shooter than Morris over the length of his career. Wade, I think right now is a better defender than Morris. You know, there was a time where Morris Agreed. Was a really, really great defender, but I think as he's aged, Wade definitely is that guy. Morris does feel like a bit of a middle ground there, where you get some a little more shooting, a little more consistent shooting. He's just under 38% for his career from three. Not on crazy volume, but he definitely can shoot. But he also can provide that physicality, some switchiness, and defense. The other thing that I like that he brings, it's funny because it's not an efficient shot. It's probably one that you don't want all the time. Wasn't it kind of nice to see one of the Cavs spacers be able to pump, drive, and hit a midi? Mm-hmm. You know, like a very flowing shot that just felt in rhythm. Like there's just not a lot of that on the team. And obviously you don't actually want too much of that. Really, you know, the numbers have borne out. You really only want your star players taking mid-rangers. But in the postseason, like, or in a tight contested game where it's just too hard to get consistently good shots, like just having that in the back pocket was kind of nice to see. Obviously, yeah. I want him taking a lot more threes than I want to see him taking twos, but like that was nice to see. And it was a noticeably different thing for the guys who play the 3-4 for the Cavaliers, because there's just not really a shot a lot of those guys take. Even Strus typically doesn't take middies. He'll take it from three or he'll go all the way to the basket. So when you are wide open on a 12 or 13 footer, it's okay to take that, you know? So it was nice to see that. Overall, obviously, he's not going to shoot 80% from three, guys. So, hater. Like, if I know, I'm such a hater. So if you think that, like, if you feel like there's been some silver bullet found, I would probably challenge that. But ultimately, they have a lot more depth there. And a guy who in playable depth at the end of your rotation seems good. I sure hope to see him locked up through the end of the year. I was surprised, frankly, to see it was a 10-dayer.
Yeah.
Because I think
it's got to be cap reasoning that people smarter than us know.
maybe, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? But ultimately, I just was. I wasn't crazy bullish on Morris as a buyout guy. I know he was on the top of your list. I was kind of more interested in some Tristan insurance at the 4-5.
Mm-hmm.
But like after seeing that, I mean, how could I not change my mind? To your point, signing an end of bench buyout guy at the end of the year, if it yields one win, it was a good signing. And I don't think they win that game if he doesn't shoot the cover off the ball, play good defense, and not mess up, which is really hard to do in a new setting. So really, really excited for Morris. And I know that conversations are going to be move very quickly into like long-term rotation talk of like, where is he going to fit in if he gets signed to an end of year deal?
Yeah.
I don't really want to have that conversation yet. I want to let it breathe. He's going to get time to play right now. That's the reality. I don't think we'll be seeing Evan until the end of the month at best. Obviously, I'm guessing. So, you know, if he shows up tomorrow, great.
Yeah, aggregate Carter, please.
Yeah, aggregate me. You know, I think he's going to get time to get run. And what he does with that run, I think, is when we'll start having those conversations.
Yeah, and, you know, I do think he brings, similar to Max Strus, seriousness all the time, right? Like, I think that that's another good thing to have. You know that he's got a reputation for being a tough player. Not someone that I've always loved to play against, which means, you know, that's a perfect formula for someone that I'd love to have on the team. And, you know, we've given him credit, obviously deserves it. Excited to see what he can bring. Having another option, I think, is valuable. But we should also give George Niang credit because he also played very well. 5 of 8 from the field. Has been shooting very well since the All-Star break.
You uncovered a heck of a stat in the Discord, buddy, about George Niang.
Was that he's the most efficient isolation player on the Cavs this year?
It sure is.
Yeah, he's averaging a point per possession in isolation, which is just over the 0.96 that Donovan Mitchell has. Frequency, a little bit lower. But actually, Carter...
So if you complain the next time he slow walks a guard to the paint, you can you can shove it.
That's a bucket every single time. Although
or at least half the time, 1 point per possession.
That actually did change after last night's game, because I was looking that up as I was getting ready to say this. We now have a new qualified member of the Cleveland Cavaliers that's ahead of him, which is Jared Allen. Jared Allen is now at 1.05 points per possession. He's now had enough isolation possessions that he's on the chart.
Come get your crown, George. Take it back.
But I just feel like he's been so much more confident shooting the ball. I feel a lot better every time the shot's going up. I just feel like, again, he's been decisive. He's getting into that rhythm. So hopefully that's
he's one of those. He's got his feet under him a lot more on these threes. Even though they're going up crazy fast, but he's set. You know, some of these like half jog pull-ups, those are just tough, man. You know, I feel like he's had his feet under him a little bit better. And you know, that three-point percentage is creeping up. He's not going to get to 40 this year. I just don't think there's enough time at this point. Unless he goes on an absolute heater. Which, you know, be my guest, George. Be my guest. You can if you want. I'm not a doctor. But, but you know, he's at 37. So he went from having, like, an objectively bad three-point percentage for the first, like, 40, 50 games of the year to, you know, this. Which is he's shooting solid
45% since the All-Star break. Like,
yeah, like that's what you want. That is an objectively good number, especially in a setting where the Cavs need way more of him than I think even George planned on them needing him. So, like, if he's shooting 40-45% from three off the bench in 15-20 minutes a game, you know, that spot's pretty secure, man. Yeah. You know, I think he's a little overtaxed right now. You can see it on some of these defensive possessions where he and Jarrett are, you know, having to clean up a lot. But you know, in a healthier role for him, like, you can't help but feel like a corner has been turned in terms of comfort level.
Yeah. And I just think, I said it even when he was struggling, it's important that he has among the most playoff experience out of anybody on this roster. Like, that it's just, you're going to feel better about his ability to have his game translate to the playoffs. And I just feel a little bit more secure having another option there at that position, at the backup power forward spot.
Isn't it nice how many options we have now? You know, like,
that's honestly, it's the biggest question mark from a team building standpoint. Like, I feel great about the guards. I know people focus on the wings, but honestly, that hasn't been a factor this season. Right, like, Max Strus has done a terrific job. Isaac Okoro has done a terrific job. Caris LeVert has done a terrific job. Like, all three of those guys are giving you two-way impact. Okoro has grown into enough of an offensive player where you can say that. Max has improved defensively enough where you can say that. Caris LeVert has been committed on the defensive end. Like, I just feel okay about the wing rotation. The big question comes with, who's going to be that four when you're staggering the two bigs? Because we know core four on the court together, they're going to play well. What's it going to look like when you have the different pairings? And just having another veteran option that has that playoff experience just makes me feel better about the amount of levers that JB has to pull, right? Like,
yeah, and the
doesn't
other
mean
thing,
it's all going to go well, but having those viable options, I think, is important and makes it easier for us to analyze what's happening on the court compared to last playoffs.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about Morris in terms of, you know, reinforcing that depth is it does allow you, if the wings are having a bad series, you know, if you're not getting much out of it, if Ice is having a bad series or Strus is having a bad series, you can go double big a little easier, or I guess technically triple big, if you want to play Wade, if you want to have Wade or Morris play the three, or put Niang out there with either of those guys and have him just guard, you know, the smallest threat on the other team, you know? So, like, I just think you have a little bit more lineup versatility, and Marcus Morris is, by the way, no playoff slouch. He's played in 12 series in his career, 6-6. So, perfectly 50-50 per Basketball Reference in those series. But you know, this is a guy who's made one Western Conference final and one Eastern Conference final in his career. Like, he's made deep runs himself and has played significant minutes in those series. He averages 13 points and 5 boards per game in the postseason, shooting 40% from three. So yeah. I just think they, again, it's about optionality. Like, yes, you want eight can't miss bullets in your chamber. I think most teams don't have that luxury. And I think so, like, the fact that if the Cavs are going into the postseason and Karras is having a rough series, you can try Sam. If Ice is having a rough series, you can give more minutes to Max, or you can upshift and play Dean. If Dean can't hit, then you play Morris. If Niang can't hang on defense, you play more Dean. Like, you just, if Mobley or Allen aren't having a good series and the double big lineups aren't working, you can downshift. Like, I just think optionality is the name of the game in the postseason. Again, I still want to see their fastball be fast. And that we just might not get a chance to see based on the injury timelines they have. But in the end, I do think the optionality here is important. I don't think they picked up a potato here. Like, they didn't just get an end-of-bench roster guy. Like, Morris, I think, can still play. And it's just going to be a matter of, is he going to be able to play if he gets picked up long-term with all these other guys? But the optionality is exciting.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Yeah, I'm actually happy that you brought up the idea of him and, like, Wade playing together if you want to go big, or, you know, you could, in theory, play him at small forward along with Mobley and Allen if you, like, you really need to go out there and get stops and, you know, you're going up against a team like Boston that has those tall wings. Like, I think that that's, you know, a viable option. I saw, you know, Sixers fans were hoping that they could bring him back, but obviously,
I think,
you know,
he lost a step on that end. I still think Wade is a better big wing defender than Morris at this point in his career, but, like, he's not a turnstile, and that does matter. Just working hard and being physical
goes
a long way.
And, you know, with Wade, the questions are more, is he going to stay healthy? Is the confidence going to be there in the playoffs? Because he hasn't really had that playoff experience yet, right? So that's just another option that you can go to. But I just like that you mentioned that as a concept, because with the injuries that the Cavs have had, like, I love to think through all the different lineups and the combinations that you can have, and my mind hasn't gone there yet because we just haven't been healthy, right? Like, there's just, it's the most frustrating aspect of what we're going through right now with the Cavs, is you're just not getting this time together at such a
not
crucial
getting the
time.
Data.
Yeah, it's so damn frustrating. Like, even it was funny because I saw, you know, that record that ESPN threw up, which was the Cavs have the best record in games decided by five or fewer points, 10-4. And I was like, man, that's wild. Like, that doesn't really line up with the clutch data and whatnot. Have you ever tried going through, and this is real sicko stuff, I just had too much time on this weekend, I had a long weekend, I was trying to find out what our clutch record was in games where all four of the core played. So I had a spreadsheet where I put yes and no, I put every individual player's game logs in, I was trying to find which ones we've all played, then filtering the clutch data by those dates. Did you know, if you have a game where it is 4:45 in the fourth quarter, and you cut the lead to four, and your opponent hits a three, and you never get back within 5 points, that is still counted as a clutch loss. Like, there was games where you had a 0-0 rating and a 200 defensive rating in the clutch, and it was because you had, like, a fraction of a minute and a bucket was scored, and that was it. Like, so I never really realized that about the clutch data, but it is just useless. But I did find that it's interesting that, you know, Cavs 10-4, best record in the league in those games in those games decided by 5 points. I thought that was interesting data, but even despite that, I still feel like there's so much room for growth when it comes to the Cavs in the clutch. Like, I still feel like Darius is getting a little bit too rushed in some of those spots. He's going to need to be better in those spots. Donovan sometimes gets a little too iso ball heavy. Like, there's so much that I want to learn and growth that I want to see with this roster fully healthy in the clutch. It's just frustrating that we don't have that. But what we do have is some interesting matchups this week with two games against Miami and obviously the rematch against Minnesota.
Justin, you got boxes full of Pepe.
I got boxes full of Pepe, baby.
I was knocked on the door and said, Carol! yeah, sorry, I had to make fun of you for that outrageous spreadsheet exercise. Truly too much time. We got to get you some fresh air, brother.
Yeah, for sure.
And I am not reacting because it was just all good information. So instead, I'm just going to make fun of you. I don't have anything to add. I just wanted to make fun of you. I mean, looking ahead to this week, I do think this is just back to the, hey, take care of your business. Like, this Heat team is beat up. This Minnesota team is a huge challenge, though. So, you know, I think, again, you might be ping-ponging again. But, like, ultimately, to your point, this is the spot where if you're going to get caught, you might get caught. But it's also the spot where if you win this stretch, if you outplay the Miamis of the world and if they win these next three, because, again, Miami's pretty beat up, yeah. At least going into tomorrow's matchup, you are sitting very pretty because you got two Charlotte games right in front of you. And, again, it must be reminded that Milwaukee has, I think, the fourth hardest schedule remaining. I think they still have three matchups against Boston left.
Yeah.
Like, that's
They've got two, but they also play Orlando twice. They play the Knicks. Like, there's some tough
games. A desperate Lakers team at New Orleans.
Thunder.
Like, at OKC. Like, and because the entire standings race, with the exception of Boston, is so bananas, no one's going to be shutting down near the end of the season. No one, like, they've got two games against Orlando at the end of the season. Orlando is fighting for damn near home court advantage.
Yep.
You know, they're only one game back of the four seed. So, like, there are no gimmies on that schedule right now. The Cavs have three games left against Charlotte. So I just think you look at the upcoming schedule, and I do think this might be the week where you go, they either let go of the rope and got caught, or they just took care of business so damn well, and now they are the favorites to lock up that two seed and have home court in the first two rounds of the playoffs.
Yeah,
and a play-in team.
Realistically, you can get the 2C back tomorrow. Like, if you take care of business against Miami, Milwaukee's playing Boston. They lose that game and the Cavs win, or the 2C, because we've got the tiebreaker, right? Like, I don't love your energy, you know, talking about Charlotte. Like, I just kind of see the rule is,
I'm just saying,
everybody's going to come back against the Cavs. LaMelo Ball's going to return, and when you look at the record against losing teams, those are not the games we should feel good about. We should feel great about this week because we are playing nothing but winning teams. But you're right, Miami's banged up. Looking at the injury report for tomorrow, Tyler Hero out, Duncan Robinson. Obviously, Josh Richardson's out for the season. Kevin Love is out, so he will not be making a return to Cleveland this season. And then you also got Nikola Jovic, who's questionable, as well as Jimmy Butler. So we'll see who's available. As I said, everybody returns against the Cavs, so Jimmy's going to return on Wednesday. And then looking ahead to next Friday against Philadelphia, that will be the Joel Embiid return game. Obviously, we will also be getting LaMelo Ball back because that's just the way the universe works.
I'm sure, but the reality is, if this team wants to... Like, and this is what it kind of comes down to, is like, if the team wants to be the two seed, they're going to have to win games games like this. They're going to have to get hot. So you can make jinx jokes all you want. I just think it's like a matter of like, hey, how serious are you about this push?
Yeah. Last podcast, you said, now that we're getting healthy, and I was knocking on wood, and then Donovan's, you know, face is broken.
That jinx I'll take. Yeah. But otherwise, I do think, like, you know, ultimately, this is a matter of, like, if you're not going to win those games, then you just weren't going to be a two seed. And that's not always a disaster. You know, again, I wouldn't have expected, if you had told me in, mid-December that we'd be fighting for the two seed, I'd be like, oh, what an amazing run we've had. What a great season. Like, so
I would
like,
be wondering how injured everybody else got, basically.
Yeah, which kind of did happen. But, yeah. But you know, I think ultimately it's not a disaster if they don't get the two seed, but I do think they have a very, very legitimate path that if Milwaukee opens up the door, and like, it wouldn't even be a big failure if Milwaukee went, you know, Milwaukee's played 68 games. They got 14 left. Like, man, like 8 of those are really tough and like mm-hmm. could be losses. Like if Milwaukee played 500 ball the rest of the way, I wouldn't think that would even be a condemnation of Milwaukee. That's how tough some of those games are. So, yeah. You know, we'll see what the Cavs can do, but an opportunity is in front of them, yeah. Undoubtedly.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny because when you say these are the games they need to go out and win, those have been the games they've been winning. Right. Like those games that, hey, you got to go out and you got to steal one against Boston. You got to win against Minnesota and New Orleans. Like those are the games they're winning. Now they just got to, you know, combine that with taking care of business. And, you know, none of this is going to be straightforward. Guys are still going to be, you know, asked to do more than normal. They're going to be overtaxed. You can see it on JA, I think, more than anybody. But you're going to need those guys to step up. Like Darius, more than anybody else, he needs to be better than he's been these last two games. He needs to be more like the Darius that we saw against the Pelicans and against the Wolves, right? Like he's been trending in the right direction. But that's why I said after the Pels game, hey, I'm not treating this as, okay, everything's fixed. I'm just taking this as another step in the right direction. You know, sometimes you take those little steps back home against Miami, kind of one of those crucial games. Like you take care of business against Miami, like you can basically seal them in the play-in, or you can prevent them from advancing and being in that mix to compete for home court. Because, you know, even though they are down at 8, it is so tight in the standings that they're still in that mix for the 4-5
matchup.
You
know what's crazy is normally at this point, like for example, just as like looking at a Miami, they are 3 games back of Orlando in the 5 spot. Indy's only 2.5. Normally that close, the percent, like with this close to the end of the season, 2 to 3 games back is an enormous delta.
Yeah.
You know, one that the odds would say is unlikely to be covered. I feel like this year all bets are off. Like I feel like we could see both these conferences with how freaking packed they are, you know, the West similarly, like there's 3 games between 4 and like 9 at this point. That's not true. I'm exaggerating, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I feel like we could see, if we took a screenshot of the standings today, I'll bet we could see 4 or 5 different swaps by the end of the year. And normally these things are kind of set and, you know, maybe 1 or 2 series might flip. I think there could be massive shifts as teams get healthy. As other teams play difficult stretches of schedule, because the competence across the league is just so high right now.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how that first quarter goes for the Cavs against Miami, because that's a team where you do not want to give them confidence. You would expect that the Cavs are going to have a healthy respect for Miami, given everything that team has done. Obviously, you had the one game against Miami earlier this year that did not go well, where Hero and Bam were out, but they still won by 30. Obviously, that is like a 3-4. You had just went to OT on the road in Philadelphia and got that big emotional win. So that made a little bit of sense. That's not the situation here. They're just as banged up as you are. You got to go out there and win. Like, that's not a team that's playing well. Even if they get Jimmy Butler back, you still have to feel good about the Cavs having enough to go out there and win that game. But you're going to have to earn it. Spo is going to throw some weird stuff at you. You're going to need to do problem solving on the fly. So I'm very, very interested to see how that goes. And we'll be going live after that podcast as well. So excited.
Two nights in a row. Lucky you guys. You
know, we're getting weird with it this week. We're doing 2 nights in a row. So we will be going live after that game. Hopefully it's a Cavs win and the Cavs are back in that 2 seed. So fingers crossed there. Knock on wood. Whatever superstitions you have, make sure that you are following through with them. Big thanks to everyone that tuned in live on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.